Welcome to the City of Tocqueville's Finance and Governance Committee. I'm the Chair, Deshaun Quinn, and joined by council members Tosh Sharp and Delvita McConnell as committee members. We have a robust agenda. Maybe use this as an opportunity to kind of remind us how this the format goes, and you know, the certain way I like to do it as chair, just to make sure we get through our agenda items. This is a committee, and so we aren't taking public comment in the committees. And what we usually do is tee up the item, have the presentation, and then I would ask for comments and questions from committee members. And with that, we'll go ahead and get started with item number 1A, public records request mitigation and staff.
And Andy Yoon is going to be doing the presentation.
Thank you. My name is Andy Yoon. I'm the Deputy City Clerk for the City. And council members, we're here today to give you an overview of public records requests, the impacts to the city, and then to request staffing to mitigate the increased workload over the past few years. Now, to start with some background, following the Public Records Act of 2006, cities were required to respond within 5 business days to all requests for public records. So in response to this legal mandate, the City Clerk's Office incorporated this workload as a department that manages city records and public access, and the City Clerk is also the city's public records officer. Now, you can see some of the metrics on page 2 of your memo, but over the past 10 years, we've seen a steady increase in the number of requests as well as their scope and their complexity, how many digital files we review, how many numbers of requests we're getting, and then how much time we're spending on those requests. And a high number of requests require IT searches through email and electronic files, which typically return hundreds, if not thousands, of results that then need to be reviewed by staff before they can be released to the public. We need to make sure that there's no sensitive or exempt information that's released. So we're completing about half of our requests in 5 days, and the rest can typically take weeks, if not months. In terms of who's submitting the requests, we're seeing a lot of requests by law firms, individuals gathering data and information, and then also from businesses. So we do see an immediate and heavy public records impact based on what's actually happening or not happening in the city. And a good example of that is last week, we actually finished a review of over 500 emails relating to the shooting that happened at the Costco parking lot. Another example is when there was businesses that were displaced due to the siting of buildings for the public safety plan. Several business owners made large public records requests, and Mr. Heiser in particular requested 29 sets of records, and that required a lot of coordination with staff, with legal, vendors, and contractors. And ultimately, he ended up canceling that request after just a few months of work. And then another example is over the course of a few weeks, Mr. Morgan, who you may have seen attend council retreats, made several requests, over 10 for different records relating to the council, just over a course of a few short weeks. And one of his requests actually resulted in over 43,000 emails in response to just one bullet point. And that request took over a year to complete. I think it was 460 days. And we needed to provide those over 17 different installments because it was there was so much volume. So the workload when it comes to public records requests is pretty labor intensive, but the city does not have any choice but to comply or face hefty penalties. Failure to respond to a public records request can result in fines of $100 per day per page, in addition to other fines, and it can result in costly lawsuits and settlements to the city. You can see some of the examples listed on page 3 of your memo. Just to go over them really quickly, a nonprofit organization submitted more than 275 requests in 2014 to Snohomish County, and the county failed to respond to just 4 of those requests, and that resulted in a $575,000 settlement. And in 2019, after an 8-year legal battle, Pierce County settled with Ms. Neeson, who's a former employee of Pierce County, for almost $1 million for failure to provide text messages from an employee's private phone, which is why you may have come across Neeson affidavits where you had to sign. And the Port of Quincy paid $350,000 in 2022 after one email landed in a spam folder. So when it comes to public records requests, there's a lot of ways that it can go wrong. Staff can fail to recognize a request. They need to interpret ambiguous phrasing. They need to perform adequate and reasonable searches. They also need to figure out what records we might have, and the records also need to be provided in a timely manner. So because of this, public records request workload can really fluctuate from handling just a few one week to having more than 15 on another week. Now, as part of the 2023-2024 biennial budget, the council actually approved a part-time position to help with public records requests. And prior to that approval, the city clerk and the deputy clerk had absorbed the workload on top of existing core functions. So legislation, agenda management, staffing council meetings, legal notices, bids, and more. But this was proven unsustainable due to requiring significant overtime to meet the workload demand. So the clerk's office is requesting the existing part-time position be increased to, clerk's office is requesting the existing part-time position be increased to a full-time position to provide the critical support to handle the workload at a high level, given the legal mandates and the financial risks involved and the sensitive information that's handled by this position. And right now we're estimating the cost to be about $94,000, which would include salary and benefits. And that will be absorbed in the current budget using available salary savings. And if the council approves, this would be included in the year-end budget amendment. We're available to answer any questions you might have.
Okay. We'll start with council questions.
Okay. So I had some questions on my other document, but I'm seeing 1,600 hours in 2023, right? And I'm, is there any way of forecasting or what you think is going to end up being for the rest of this year on this job?
Of course. So, I mean, we've seen the request trending to what you see on figure one. So that's the top upper right of that info memo on page two. We don't anticipate that this will ever get easier. There's a lot of legal mandates when it comes to public records requests. Things that are happening in the city or even locally or nationally can result in public records requests. But the amounts that we're getting for this year, I think over the past 2 months, we've handled about 40 requests. So we're on track to go beyond what we had last year.
Okay. And then the technology and software systems, is that helping or is that causing this work to be harder? Is there a way to make this process easier in any way?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So as you have pointed out, the technology and software programs that we have in the city do ultimately result in more public records requests, but we also have the community benefit because these programs are implemented by city departments as a result of trying to increase services to the public. So I don't think we have a way around not being able to provide public records. The whole point of the Public Records Act was to increase accessibility of the government to the public. That said, there are things that we have done in the city to make this workload easier. We have the Digital Record Center, where we have millions of images and core city records like contracts, legislation, agendas, minutes. Those are all available online, and they've resulted in a great savings to staff time. And I don't know if Christy wants to speak more.
That's such a good question. But the one thing that I find that kind of overcomplicates it with technology is that the Public Records Act has been in place for about 18 years, and technology has blossomed in that period of time. You know, when we're dealing with paper, it's easy to find. It's right there. We can find it. We know what we're dealing with. Now we're dealing with the email system, the SharePoint system, our databases, CQuickFix, the Digital Record Center. Every one of those has their own search criteria that are needed in separate interfaces. So the IT department's impacted too, and they're shipping it all to us, and then we're having to review every one of those documents on content. There's no scanning it. We have to review it for content in case there's attorney-client privilege, in case there's social security numbers, in case there's bank account numbers. So so for me, the technology has made it harder in that I'm doing a lot of those reviews, and it just means that there's just that much more to coalesce. Mm-hmm. So it's a good benefit. Technology is great for the community because we can get them things faster, but in the realm of the public records requests, it's a lot of stuff coming at us from different media that we have to review.
Absolutely. Okay. And then you have 5 days to respond to them with, you know, they're asking for this. You have 5 days to respond, or is that 5 days to give them something?
Good question. It's five. They get to hear from us in five business days.
Okay.
And that's with us giving them our story. Here, we can get it to you right away. Here it is.
Okay.
Or it's going to take us 30 days for a first installment.
Okay.
And the law is pretty clear that they want 30 day increments. So, okay. And that's, you know, if we have to do a 10 installments, then they're every 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, so we have to just reach out and give them a plan on day one.
And you have like, I mean, I'm assuming you're going to have more than enough work for one FTE, right? I mean, considering.
So, just to be kind of clear, and I want to, I've been here 45 years. Mm-hmm. I'm a city clerk. I'm mm-hmm. retiring in a couple of weeks. So I'm going to be very candid about the reality because I don't want the model that we currently have to be the model that our new incoming city clerk has to follow.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened is there is one non-represented employee in the clerk's office,
mm-hmm.
non-union and exempt from overtime, and that's the city clerk. In this case, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
I have made the decision to work 50 to 60 hour weeks to make sure there is no public records request sanction on my watch.
Mm-hmm.
I have worked here 45 years. This is my town, and I will not let there be a public record mm-hmm. sanction. But that model, you know, by the time I became city clerk, I was 50 years old, mm-hmm. and my tiny little children had grown up.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose to give up some work-life balance. That can't be our model moving forward mm-hmm. for staff,
mm-hmm.
and it just can't be. And so we've tried the part-time person. We, in 5 years, we went through five people. So by the time we had them trained, they quit because they want full-time work.
Yeah.
So it's in the city's best interest to mitigate this risk
uh-huh.
by giving dedicated staff to this body of work. The other cities have done it. We lost our prior deputy city clerk to the city of Renton to provide dedicated public records request work.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel we're a little behind the eight ball on this.
Okay.
Our staffing levels in the clerk's office are from 1998.
Mm-hmm.
We don't come before you often. We don't ask for a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But as we build a city clerk's office with a new city clerk,
mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that we can give her the support to be successful mm-hmm. and not a situation where if she wants us to succeed and not get a sanction, then she's going to put in 60 hours.
Right. And you want to transition this over in a clean.
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I get it.
Do you have questions?
Yeah, I
think that. Okay. I just wanted to recognize Catherine Richard, if you had any questions.
Yes, I do. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. So how many is in the city clerk's office? How many staff members?
Right now we have 3.5 staff members, not including Christy. Including Christy, we have 4.5. We're very understaffed right now due to positions that have been vacant for a long time.
Okay, so you're just empty staff members. You're saying how many is the normal staff amount that you're supposed to be fully staffed?
5.5 when we're fully staffed.
Okay, so you're down a person already, and then you're down a part-time position. So for this records requesting, is that right?
Well, actually, we do have a part-time public records person who has been with us since last year. The council authorized that position with last year's budget. What we're asking is due to the legal mandates for this position and the workload that we've seen right now, we're absorbing all the public records request workload on top of our existing core duties, and it's not a sustainable model. We've attempted to come before the council several times now, but have not been able to due to budget cuts.
I got it. So what I'm trying to get to is you need an additional staff. You're short a person currently.
Yes, what we're asking for is to increase the existing part-time position to full-time.
I understand. So instead of volunteering stuff, I'm just asking the question so I can understand. Mm-hmm. So right now, your department is short one member. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
So what is that additional, if they were hired tomorrow, what does that person do?
Public records request.
Okay, so you're asking for a full-time position or a half a position when you're already short a position.
Yeah.
Could I?
Well,
short position is temporary. It's not filled, but we're working on recruitment. So the city clerk's office has 5.5 people, and we would like it to be 6.
I understand.
The other vacancies are not public records requests related. They don't handle public records requests due to the level of work needed.
So if you were to hire the full staff, you'd be 5.5. So you're telling me that fifth person or the additional position is not legally or at all able to do the public works work?
So the existing positions in the clerk's office are union, and adding to their jobs to the extent required for public records requests would mean that we're forcing them to work out of class. Typically, we're anticipating that the public records job would be non-rep, and that's due to the level of confidentiality required in this position.
Oh, okay. So you want to hire a full-time position that's not represented in order to do this public requesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I understand. And then what you mentioned, 30 days, you have to respond to folks and give them some sort of answer. And you mentioned that certain things are more complex as far as issues you have to tackle. As long as you respond to them in some fashion, which is an email saying, we got your request, is that good enough?
Yes, we are required by law to respond to the requester within 5 days. So that can be, we acknowledge that we got your request. Here's when we estimate having your records ready by, or we found your records, here it is. And then the other one is, we've found some of your records, and then more are forthcoming in a future installment. The 30 days is not standard. About half of our requests are taking more than 30 days, and that's typically requests by law firms and businesses. So they're very complex requests.
I understand. Again, what I'm trying to understand by asking simple questions so I can understand.
Yeah.
So as far as legally, if something is more complex, you can take as much time as you need as long as you continue to respond to the requestee within 30 days.
I would say no, because I'll let Christy speak to this.
Yeah, we can't kick the can down the road consistently without giving them some deliverables. So we can kick the can down the road maybe a time or two. 30 days, maybe 60, but we do have to provide deliverables. The law is pretty clear that they want deliverables to these folks, and that we can't just keep saying, we're going to take longer. And some cities haven't done that, and they can get into trouble by causing what's considered a delay. And so I think we've skirted sanctions because we simply don't play in those arenas. We play it straight. We get people records within 30 days as a rule.
But I understand.
Christy,
but if
part of the issue is that some of the requesters know the process and they basically look to catch you in something.
Correct.
And there's plenty of lawsuits that have existed because staff has missed one or two things or didn't come in the format that they asked for. Literally, there are people whose job it is to do public records requests, and they actually end up getting paid out from jurisdictions because they know maybe how challenging it is to get some of the records. I'll say formerly microfiche, it's not online, and they know it's going to take work, but they actually make it up. This has happened across the state because of public records laws are very specific, and it's happened multiple times in multiple jurisdictions.
Right. And it's one of the things I think about with the sanctions that you're talking about, Councilmember Quinn, is that those high level six figure sanctions are what we're trying to avoid here. And it doesn't take much for those sanctions to get in the high six figures. And if that happens, in my view, two things happen. The public trust is compromised because our constituents are wondering, we failed on a public records request. We didn't give somebody what they wanted. Were we trying to hide something specifically and on purpose? The other part is that's general fund money. If we get a $500,000 sanction, not even our WCIA deductible is going to cover that kind of money. And that's the kind of thing that I live in fear of, because I've seen my peers suffer that fate, and no city ever feels it's going to happen to them until they get that sanction and they're in the newspaper. So
can I interject, please? So I don't know how you run your meeting, but are we allowed to interject when other council members are speaking, or do I have my time?
I wanted to make sure, Christy, inside here, you can have time. But if Christy is here and wants to make a point, I wanted to create space for her to have that and to be able to go back to specific issues that have come up previously to help add information for your for yourself that this process is something that's been going on for a while.
Well, I appreciate it, Chair. I just don't want my time to be interrupted because I'm trying to get someplace. So if we're allowed to interject, can I finish what I'm saying? So if we're allowed to interject in the middle of folks' question, that's fine if that's how you run your meeting. But if we give each other their time and respect to, so I can get to my point and get up out of my, so I can give you your time. I just need to understand. And if you want to volunteer information, you certainly can do so, but I just need to ask the questions to make me understand. So just so you know, I appreciate your comments, but I'm trying to get someplace. So I'm trying to be succinct. So if you just allow me to get to my couple of questions, you can take as much time as you need when it's your opportunity. Is that fair?
You know, we can have this conversation offline because it's hard to do it virtual to be able to.
I understand. Kind of that's why I'm saying, like, let me get to it.
Just
and
go
then
ahead.
I can.
Let's not waste any more time.
Thank you. So the examples that you had mentioned in the document, are any of those the settlements, those misses, are these real world things that actually has happened or we come close to violating? The example is the page 3, you mentioned the 3 fines or whatever. Are these things that the city of Tukwila has actually gotten close to violating, thus justifying the additional half position?
No, luckily, Tukwila has done very well when it comes to handling public records requests. These are just examples of what could happen when public records requests are handled incorrectly.
Okay. So these are just for us to have an understanding. And then do you by chance have, you're saying that the work that the city clerk is doing to do this work cannot be captured financially, so that individuals doing essentially work beyond the 40 or so hours that you're contractually obligated to have. Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm not sure I follow that question, but the hours
Ms. Flatter, Ms. Flattery mentioned that she spent quite a bit of time working off hours and sacrificing her workload balance, implying that there's a bunch of time she spent looking at these requests. So what I'm trying to get to is whoever's occupying the position is using up more than the 40 hours, which I imagine is what what a person in your position, standard position is. You're going beyond that 40 hours regularly to justify the half position. Is that what I'm understanding?
No, I wouldn't say that we're going beyond to justify the position. Right now, Christy is working. We have the part-time position who's working 20 hours, and then Christy is regularly working. We're estimating about 20 hours extra to handle public records requests. So the amount of workload does add up to a full-time position.
I see. So in the course of her duties, plus the halftime position, we're able to manage the load. Is that right? We haven't gone.
Yes,
she doesn't have to put in 60 hours a week or anything to make this work. She can do it, but it uses up a lot of her time.
Times where she has needed to put in 60 hours, and that's one of the reasons why this position should be a non-represented employee. There's a little bit more flexibility with how much time is needed, so that when the workload does fluctuate.
Okay, so then there's no chart that shows me that the city of Tukwila, even though it's salary that's not being paid because it's a it's a salary position, shows us that we're going over budget to manage these cases. We don't have anything. I can't say, well, it looks like about 30 hours or 10 hours or 5 hours is going beyond that position for me to justify saying, yeah, let's do a full-time position. There's nothing I can see that tells me that, is there?
We do have staff time tracked, which you can see on page 2 of your memo. That does not, unfortunately, include Christie's hours, as you mentioned, but just based on the amount of time that she's put in over the years, we know that her work is equivalent to about 20 to 30 hours extra.
Okay. That's my last question. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. All right. I have a couple of quick questions. And I'm wondering, and again, a big part of this is understanding and being able to put the clearest amount of information possible. So, Christy, you talked about additional hours. None of that's going to be factored in because you're exempt, but it's been needed for some time. It's not being captured by the current halftime or the halftime position where in 5 years you have five different people. So I'm just wondering, I know we are so far doing well managing this, but like both Laurel and Andy and Christy, you've seen cases where we had to run down the information and it's taken longer. So I guess my question, Christy, is in those cases, you can't just get, you don't have the clock forever, and whatever you do is going to be interpreted, for example, by the entities, the public disclosure are where they said you were willfully responding or willfully avoiding responding to these requests in the manner in which it's been given. So, I mean, situations like that where you have to take time to go find the document, you find it, if you write it down and you have to go find another copy, can you just give some examples of both calls
so many complexities, Councilmember Quinn. It's hard to quantify. Sometimes people want our databases. You can't have a database. We have to meet with the requesters. We have to talk with them. We have to find a way to exempt certain fields. It is so complicated. And there's just so much girth associated with it. I mean, what's running through my head are, you know, it's so nonsensical. It's hard to believe the law says we have to do this work. And it is something that has to be a dedicated individual who's done it for a while, if there's going to be success, and that we don't. For instance, as you mentioned earlier, requesters know how this plays out. We have many prolific requesters who understand how they want to see us fail. I had a person ask me once, they are requesting what they know we have. We don't know what it is yet because it's going to be buried in the 20,000 emails that I'm reading. But I had a person once come to me and we provided him some records and I gave him a paper copy and he goes, I need something else from you. You've got something else for us. And after my heart stopped, I called DCD and I said, what's this guy talking about? I gave him the record. And they looked farther and they found that he had also submitted an electronic copy of the piece of paper that he had submitted. So he knew that we had another record and he was trying to trip us up. Those are the kinds of things that work for many requesters. If we fail to provide records, they take us to court and we lose. The agencies always lose. That's why we have so many of these sanctions. So for me, when I've got 25,000 emails to review, it's a concern that you know how many requesters are still requesting attorneys for the Maple Crest fire because they want to sue us? They, you know, so they're looking for records that would blame us, but a public records violation lawsuit would work just as well. So these are complicated, confusing, high-tech responses that we have to use. You know, for me, I have to know every intricacy of the email system so I can search for the keyword that they're asking for, so I can be sure I'm not kicking something out of the mix that needs to go to them. So it needs to be a dedicated individual who can spend their work time on this body of work to protect the city. That's, to me, the clerk's office is, in my view, has been alone in this too long. I've been asking for 10 years. In order for me to get to you, I have to get through city administration. That hasn't happened until this year. We have a mayor and an interim city administrator who support this and want this for us, because it can't just be my team who are sweating bullets trying to keep us out of this hot water tank. But we need city administration, and we need the council to recognize this body of work needs to be supported at the highest level, so we aren't worrying about this situation with people trying to work inordinate amounts of overtime just to try to keep the pack of dogs from chasing us down and winning. So that's.
Thank you. My second question, and I'll state what's obvious in the packet, definitely familiar with this issue. So in 2011, we had 50, right? And then 2018, 2017, we were up to 1689, and this year we're up to 1628. And so in your professional experience all these years, this is, I'm going to assume that my takeaway is we're seeing it going up. It's not being accomplished very well or managed through just a part-time, that because of the request and the complexity of the request, you're saying do not ignore 1689 and 1628 and assume potentially that it'll be that or higher.
So here's how what I feel about these charts, and I said this to Andy, but I would have left them out. I don't like them. I don't like them at all, and here's why. You will see one request, and here's an example. One request can be something as simple as, we have a lot of fender benders down in the CBD. Everybody who gets in the fender bender calls us up and says, I would like traffic camera video from this accident down here. Those are easy. We know exactly what they want, when they want it, easy. That's one request. That takes us a short period of time. My 22,000 record request is also one request on this chart. There is no comparison. So I don't like these charts, because one request that can take an hour is on the chart as one request that will take me 9 months. So I don't like these charts. They're not really synonymous of what we need to know. What we need to know is that the city of Tukwila has gotten public records requests from attorneys that I have seen win public record sanctions in other areas. We get every high-powered attorney coming through, and that much I can convey without any restraint whatsoever. But comparing them one to one on a scale, it's misleading. And if it were up to me, those would come out, because if anybody's just a picture person and they're looking, hey, it's gone down last year, what are they complaining about? I think it's an unfortunate misassessment.
Thank you. And so I would assume total files probably doesn't get it either, but just for...
No, because the total files of what I present, of what we end up giving a requester,
yes,
may not be the same, very, even close to the same number that it's taking us to review.
Correct.
For that request.
Correct. But just for public consumption, 2023, there were 43,867 files reviewed, and that's gone up gradually since 2017, at least according to the chart. So I'm just going to go ahead and go, because we've been asked to take action. This is the one item that we are asking action on. And I wanted to ask if folks are comfortable forwarding this to the March 11th COW, and then March 18th regular meeting. And right here, it's being asked to go on the consent agenda. So I'll ask my fellow committee members.
I am good with, forwarding this. Yeah.
Okay. Councilor Richard?
No.
Good. All right. So we'll take it off agenda, but there's a majority that says go forward with this. And I think maybe what could be helpful, there's no opting out of public records. And so being clear about that, we don't have the option. We can't ask somebody to go outside, work outside their class without getting a finding. So it's got to be done by somebody, and we have to respond to it. So we'll move it forward with the majority support. And now we'll move on to item 1B, financial policies. Thank you.
So thank you, council members. This is an opportunity to get your eyes on the existing financial policies as the City Council prepares to embark upon the budget process this year. back in 2020, I was the staff lead on a project to overhaul the financial policies by taking a variety of policies from different sources, combining them into one document, making it streamlined, a little bit better organized, and it was also an opportunity for the City Council at the time to weigh in with very specific wishes for what the policies would say. And so what's in your packet is the current existing policies. This opportunity on your agenda tonight was presents an opportunity for you to look at them again, ask any questions about anything that may exist. I think they're in really good shape still. There is one thing that I would like to have changed, and if you're interested in pursuing that, I would bring it back to next month's committee meeting. And then if there was anything else that came out of this conversation tonight, we would bring that back as well. So I guess with that, I'll turn it back to the chair to facilitate
questions. Yes, can you mention the one thing? Just
absolutely, to, yeah. So this is on page 10 of your packet under grants, yes. Section 5 grants. And the second one is says staff shall obtain approval from the appropriate City Council committee before applying for grants requiring a local match. I would like to change it to have committee approval sought for unbudgeted local match. So that if you've already approved a budget for a capital project specifically, and the staff has already planned on a match and that was called out in the budget and budgeted, they wouldn't then have to come back before the committee.
Correct. So like the transportation committee has done the research, go for that grant, then there's not a second step in the process. Okay, yeah. Thank you for that clarification. All right. We'll start with Councilmember Sharp.
And I currently don't have any questions regarding the document, but if Laurel wants to explore verbiage on Section 5B, I'm okay with extending that time.
I'm good with 5B if you want to update that. I mean, I went through this with a fine-tooth comb. Only thing I saw was Section 9A, just needs a little space from the first, right?
Oh, that's it. Yes, we can certainly fix
that. Okay, and that was it. I don't have any questions on it.
Yep.
It's a good guideline for us.
I'm comfortable as well, but I did have a question. I'm comfortable with 5B, very familiar with these policies. Just kind of wanted to confirm, so we did the research, we aligned it, we put it in one place. I think this question is for you, because this is in alignment with best practices, but don't let me put words in your mouth, because there are strict guidelines as it relates to financial policy. And so would you say in what's here, it's consistent with?
Yes, I would say these are consistent with best practices. They're consistent with recommendations from GFOA, which is Government Finance Officers Association, which is a national organization for government finance professionals. And it also speaks to how we currently draft our budget. We did make some updates the last time back in 2020 when we incorporated the party-based budgeting elements into this list of policies as well. So yes, they're definitely best practices, and we do follow these as we draft the budget.
Thank you. And I saw one more. I think it was at the, it's not the reserve policy, but obviously what this past week we had a state audit review and we got a clean audit.
Yes.
And
yes,
there's, I think there's something in here about the reporting. So I know, and then the GASB and kind of all of the appropriate documents that cities have to follow, or, you know, you may not end up getting.
Right. And I will say this policy doesn't speak to everything. There are certain things that are state law we're required to do. They're not called out of the policy. This really captures the best practice and also our current methodology for adopting budgets and following different financials. Like, for example, it's not state law to maintain 18% of prior year ongoing revenues, but it's definitely good practice to have a solid reserve policy in place.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Well, this was discussion only. Sounds like there's
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. There's no hand up feature. May I ask one question?
Yeah.
Okay. Laurel, there was a question I had about local purchasing. Remember we had that little discussion. Is that,
I do.
Would that Yeah, is that, would that be on this document or is there a different one? And if it's go ahead.
Sorry, I certainly didn't mean to interrupt you. It's actually in our city's purchasing policy, which I do plan to also bring to the next committee agenda for a committee discussion and review of that. And I thought that would be a good opportunity for you to bring up your request, if that works.
Yes, I didn't mean to jump the gun. I didn't want to miss the opportunity if it's supposed to be in this and I space. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Chair.
You're welcome.
All right, we'll move on to the next item. And again, I want to make sure we have clarity, right? And online, it's challenging. So let's give a little patience because I think got interrupted last time. But I'm good with that because that's the space we're in. Let's go to the monthly general fund expenditure update. Perfect. December 2023.
Thank you. Tommy Fullerton, Deputy Finance Director. So tonight we're going to look at the December General Fund Monthly Expenditure Report and the January General Fund Monthly Expenditure Report. Had we met last month in January, we would be given the December report then. This is our first meeting of the year, so we're going to get us caught up. Looking forward into March, we'll go through the February General Fund Monthly Report as well as the quarter three report. And so every time we meet, we're going to give reports to keep us caught up. So I'm going to present from our packet, page 16. So the details on the reports are in the memo. I'm going to speak to the charts and summarize those. So I'm going to start on page 16. And we spend most of the time looking at the right half of the chart. So we're talking about allocated budget, percent expended, and the change over the prior years. To the left gives us historical information to compare. The reason why we look at it in three different angles, we look at the same numbers, three different angles, just for, if we looked at just one level, it would be skewed if we just looked at budget to actual. So we try and see budget to actual, where we are to the year and what we did last year, three different ways. And we also look at it at the department level and the category level. So the same numbers, multiple views will give us a good understanding of really where we are. And so starting with the departments, the allocated budget, that's the column that says allocated budget to actual. At the end of December, you will go down the line, you'll see all departments came in under budget. Part of the reason they were significantly under budget was because labor negotiations had been going all year that did not get settled. So there was additional expenditures we had anticipated and budgeted for that didn't get paid out because of ongoing labor relations, as well as there's some unfilled positions. So moving to the right, to the percent expended. At the end of the year, that's 100% of the year, this is the end of December, departments came in at 90, at the department level, they came in at 94%. And then including non-departmental, 93.3% at the end of the year. So again, under budget at the end of the year. When we look at comparisons, what was spent in 2023 compared to 2022, generally speaking, we'd like to expect a slight increase of about 5-ish percent in expenses. So when we come down here, there's two that are large. Administrative services, they're about $1.6 million over. The reason that is so large is due to a $1.3 million broadband infrastructure grant by TIS. And police is the other one that's over. They're over significantly. When I say over, they're over last year's spending. So overtime brought that up. They had some technical services provided by Axon Enterprises. But by looking at it from three different areas, we can see that both of those departments are, they came in under budget. They're also under 100% for the year. And so what that shares is that these expenses were pre-approved, budgeted for, and anticipated. These were just higher costs in the prior year. I'd also like to point out on the subtotal all the way to the right, we will see 7.6% in the percent change. And so what that represents is the departments limited their expenses compared to the prior year. They increased by 7.6%, but that was at a time when CPI was 9.5%. So consumer price index, which is the benchmark, consumer spending, 9.5%, they held their expenses to 7.6. So I'm going to then go to in your packet, page 19. Okay, we're looking at the same data here, but we're looking at it by category. Also, the same format, allocated budget, percent to expense, and change from the prior year. So going down, we can just see in the subtotals, all categories came in under budget. The percent to the year, we can see 100% of the year, they were at 93%. We saw that at the department level, so those numbers agree. And then year over year, totally, expenses increased by $863,682. So the difference between that number and what we saw, prior number, was at the department level compared to the entire category, which includes capital. In this case, they held their spending for 1.2% over last year. So year over year, they came in just slightly above last year, 1.2%. And so we will stop there. That's it for December. We'll move into January, but I do want to pause and see if there's any questions, or should we just keep moving?
Let's see if there's questions.
Sure.
December.
Yep. And I think as we go through this format again, when we look at January, you've seen it once, you'll be like, okay, now I've got this. And we'll look at this every month, just an ongoing conversation about the same stuff. So we can open it up for questions here.
I don't have any questions yet.
Okay. Councilor Sharp, do you have any questions on the December chart?
Yes, I do. So the chart on 19, are you saying how many months is that?
12 months. We're into December, so 12 months.
Okay, so it's the last year. Is that right, Tony?
Yep, 2023.
Okay, and then on the chart, it has parentheses on the far right-hand corner. Some have them, some don't. What's the parentheses mean? What is that supposed to tell me when I look at the chart?
Yeah, I want to make sure I'm looking. Are you looking at by department or by category?
I'm looking at page 19, this one right here. Boom.
Yeah,
I know that's not easy for you, but there's a, like the first number is 21.3, 57.3, 40.9. And I noticed that there's parentheses around some of the percent charts. I just want to know what the parentheses mean. If that's supposed to tell me something, it's not reaching out and grabbing me.
Sure. So percent means under and non-percent means over. So salaries, 21.3% under.
Aha.
Less than last year.
This is in lieu of a. Oh, okay, so it's in lieu of a minus. The parentheses mean that we was under. Okay, and then I noticed some of the line items, starting with technology supplies, 236% above. Professional service, 213. Rentals, 531%. And then machinery and equipment. Is there some short kind of sweep, why they're so high in these charts, like the rentals? What did we rent? Condominiums or a boat, or what's that one, man?
Yeah, thank you. So what we're talking about there is the dollar amount over last year. And so specifically, thank you, fleet leasing was what changed this year in 2022 versus 2023.
Okay, so but rentals is cars.
Yes.
Okay.
Vehicles.
Okay. And machinery and equipment, is that something similar? Maybe like a piece of equipment?
The one that's under 40,000?
Excuse me,
40.2%?
It says 279.6%. I'm looking at the really big one.
Okay.
So
okay.
Down towards the bottom, it's just,
Yeah. So that we're looking at capital now, capital equipment. And again, compared to the prior year, it's up. It's also important to look at it from all angles. It's under budget, so it means we knew it was coming. We budgeted it. It has been approved. It was just more this year than in the prior year.
Got it. Thank you, Tony.
So, Tony, it might be helpful to clarify, because we ended up having to do this all last year. When we talk about percent compared to the previous year, being able to, what are the factors? Right? Because we spent a lot of time in the space, and we'll spend a lot of time going forward around these numbers. But the point is that was the lowest expenditure year for COVID or, you know, I don't know, CPI, but there's a reason we're doing year to year, which fluctuates. So could you speak to, I mean, 276% would catch anybody's attention, but if you haven't been on this committee, you kind of don't know the process of of the percentages and that, and the reason why we're also doing that. And again, you can restate anything that I said, is that the approach we're taking to the budget is year to year. And we have access to information to give those percentages in real time and impact. So could you speak to that? Because we're going to see these again.
Absolutely. We'll see these again. And this is why it's important to look at these numbers from three different angles, because you see 279%, you think, wow, that's a lot of money, $808,000. But compared to what the budget was, compared to the percent expended, you'll see that we are right in line with the budget. These are items that we had foreseen. We brought to council. We said, this is what we want to purchase. These are costs coming. It's approved. It's just over the prior year that it's different. So you can't look at just one aspect. That's why we got to look at all three different aspects and look at it from a department level and a category level to give us a good understanding of what these are. And so this is the first time we've seen it. Like Council Chair Quinn had mentioned, we're going to see this every month and have this ongoing dialogue, and you're going to start to pick up on this, and you're going to hear the same things over and over. For example, we had that IT grant at the beginning of the year. So they spent a lot of money, more than last year. That was significantly high. It's reimbursable, and we know it's in the budget, but every month we're going to see one column showing they spent a lot more. And the other two columns, we're going to see they're within budget, and the percent to expense is in line. So looking at the numbers multiple different ways, and again, I say that over and over because we're going to see it over and over, and we're going to have a good understanding of what the general fund's looking like by the time we're done.
Yeah, and I'll get to my question in a second, but I also want to make sure this is kind of clear for everyone. Allocations kind of have been different as well. So those allocations show up this year, and it looks like the percentage is way, way bigger, but it's because this allocation fits within this particular amount. But we'll have time. I'm just saying, don't forget to articulate that every time we go through this so that we know what numbers we're looking at. But I had a question just as a way to point the difference. So on page 16, obviously the thing that you highlighted, the $1.6 million, and you said that that's due to a 1.3. So basically what you're telling us here is this would be 300,000 and whatever that percentage was, which takes away the 33%.
Yes.
Okay. And the same is true for the other one that you have highlighted of $2 million, which was an expenditure that was budgeted for. But last year, at this time, this amount doesn't correlate. So that's why it comes out as a higher percentage, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Good. I want to make sure we're going through this. And again, the committee who was pre-seasoned last year, every time we saw percentages, it would be a time to highlight, so there was some consideration. So as we keep going forward, I would just encourage you to share what you shared with us last year as we go through the process. All right. We're on to 2024, January.
Okay. So January is coming up. Okay, so it starts on page 22 of the packet. And give me a sec. Give it a little bit here. Okay, so same format. We look at the January numbers, allocated budget percent to expense, change over the prior year. Similar to December, in December we expect to come in within budget. Obviously, we're at the end of the year. January, it's very doubtful you're going to be over budget for the first month of the year. So there's not going to be a lot to see here. The real activity comes later in the year, but let's just get through it. So in January, allocated budget, negative, everybody's under budget, under their allocated budget. So we use the term allocated budget versus budget. because a budget would signify that we take an annual budget divided by 12. So we don't do that. We allocate it by month. So we look at expenses that come in and put those expenses in the month that they come in. For example, insurance is paid at the beginning of the year. WCIA, a high amount. If we just divided by 12, they would look over budget all year. And so we put the expenses in the year that they come. When we try to identify grant revenues coming in quarterly, we put those in the months that they come. So there is a purpose to allocated budget, and we're going to see that as we go throughout the year. So all departments are within their allocated budget. Again, they're under because January, here we are, still labor negotiations going on. So we anticipated higher expenses that will come at some point if they're under. So moving to the right to percent expended. At the end of January, we're at 8.3% of the year. But if you go down to the subtotal, you'll see the departments came in at 6.4 and overall 5.9. And so percent to expense, we think we're going to come in around 8. We don't want to be over 8. We're at 5.9. So that's pretty good. There's a couple of increases, and those are due to the risk management. So the two that are high, finances over, mm-hmm. as well as public works. Those are due to the WCIA insurance. It's high. You can see, though, we're within allocated budget. So we knew that it was coming, but it is significantly higher than where we are in January. Okay. So compare 2022 to 2023, two departments stand out. Oh, okay. Finance and the police. And so we've looked at those. We know it's an increase in insurance for the finance. And I said police, I meant fire. My ruler was off. Yeah. Okay. And then fire is contracted services. So the contracts are just higher than they were last year, $96,000. Okay. Let's keep moving and go on to the categories.
Yeah.
Page 25. So same thing, looking at the categories, all categories total by total are within the allocated budget. The percent expended is 5.9 at 8.3% of the year, so they are right in line with where they should be. We do see some that are higher under the category professional services, reporting 9.8%, and that's an increase due to the insurance liability, the risk management program. I keep calling it insurance liability. What we're talking about is the risk management program, though, if you're familiar with the programs there. Professional development is higher. So the mayor's office saw a significant increase in membership costs. Some examples were the AWC and the South Cities Association Clean Air. However, they are within budget, but the costs are just higher. Technology services had a PD software maintenance contract that's causing that to look higher. And then the year-over-year spending is a large increase to professional services. And to the risk management, professional services is where we used to have the fire. They would be up in salaries, but they're now RFA, so they're now showing higher in the professional services. And so I think that wraps it up. We'll have questions on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. My only question is we spent, the city of Tukwila, that is, spent some money on the Riverton Church. Where would this, if it would show up at all, where does it show up on this chart if I was looking? What line item does it show on?
Okay, so it's going to show in a couple places. It's not just one place because we present that in a few places. Professional services, we see it. We also show it at the department level because staff time is being taken out in every department. So we don't have a specific line item that says Riverton Park in here. So we'll see it at the department level by staffing going up. We'll also see it in the categories under professional services primarily because we have contracts with that. We do provide reporting on Riverton Park. We have meetings internally. I think that might be something we can start bringing to finance and governance, though, to show. Call that one program out and show it on a go-forward basis.
It's also in the weekly email that the council receives from the city administrator.
So we don't see it in this report because it's one program we're talking about. These are combined programs that make these up, but we will drill into that going forward to give
okay
answers on that.
Okay. Folks, even like myself, would be curious if that shows up as a line. I know it's a specific project, so it's probably a more complex because it includes salaries, which is hard to capture. But I appreciate you. Thank you.
And the good news is we do capture salaries. I have that. So when I see you next month, we're going to get in that deep. I promise.
Okay. So on that, we're not recreating information because that's coming monthly, but it could be referenced for our own awareness of the tally that we're at. I think that's a good kind of prudent approach. Councilmember Rosell.
Yeah, can you just explain a little bit more for me about fire, how fire's in the professional services? What is that?
Yeah, good. Before, fire was within the city department. Mm-hmm. We would see them, they'd have their own department. We would see them in salaries and benefits. Mm-hmm. Now that they've left the RFA, we no longer have them as salaries and benefits, but what we have is a contract mm-hmm. with them to pay for that. So that's why it's reported now under professional services, because it's a contract mm-hmm. instead of salaries and benefits. So it moved from one line item to another.
And if I could add, this will be the last year you see this in here because the annexation was voted in, mm-hmm. so it's effective this year, but we're still under contract until next year. Because we can't collect, they can't collect property taxes until 2025. So you're going to see that contract all the way through this year, and then next year will be gone.
Okay.
But great. We do have to still retain, because I don't want any surprises. There are some small costs to the fire department that we still have to retain. Mm-hmm. We're required to provide fire marshal services. We can contract for that, but it's still a city expense. And we still have our left two retiree liabilities, medical, that's our responsibility.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's it.
I know I've seen it. I don't know where if there's a category, there's what you can expect in that category. And again, I don't want to create work, but like under professional services, what would naturally go there? So maybe that's something we can just work out over the year. Obviously, none of us are going to memorize what goes in there, but if there's an interest in wanting to kind of break out the costs, like, oh, okay, that's why. But writing RFA is a great example of, like, that's a big lump in professional services, so that's going to always have a higher percentage than previous years. So so I didn't have any questions. I'm very comfortable with what's here. Thank you. Look forward for you to come back.
Yeah.
And we'll see how it's going. And that's all the business items. Any miscellaneous? All right. We are adjourned.